This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. My next guest is one of our most respected film critics and historians whose work you've seen for many, many years on Entertainment Tonight and his own Reels channel show. And now he has his own channel on YouTube, and his reviews appear online on IndieWire.com. He's also the author of a movie guide, which he's been publishing and updating every year since, I think, 1969. And the 2014 edition is available now in paperback and as an iPhone app. Leonard Maltin, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for listing all of my credits so neatly.
It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Paul.
You're not doing the weekly Reels channel show anymore, but you have something coming up for the holidays?
Yeah, I'm partnering with Gray Drake, who's a really smart, funny young woman who works for Rotten Tomatoes, and we're becoming sort of tag team reviewers, debaters, about current movies, and we're doing a holiday movie special that'll start airing December 15th on Reels channel.
Great. And I've seen your stuff on YouTube, and you're using it as kind of a place where you answer questions from fans and you rant about various things as well, in addition to the movie reviews. And I mentioned the word rant because you called it that the first time you came right out of the gate on YouTube because you were upset about an experience you had in a movie theater. Would you share that with my listeners?
Well, sure. Somebody said it was too polite to be a rant, that I didn't get. I didn't foam at the mouth enough. But what is fairly simple is that, I see a lot of films at screenings, at press and media screenings, but I also go to the movies, just like anybody else. And in this particular case, though, I'd never been to one of those live events. They do concerts now. They do the Metropolitan Opera, rock concerts, all sorts of things you can see at your neighborhood multiplex.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are actually done live, and some of them are pre-recorded. In this case, it was the London production of Stephen Sondheim's show, Merrily We Roll Along. And a friend said, "You want to go?" I said, "Sure." So there were four of us. We got to the local theater, and we knew to get there early. We knew it would be full, and it was full. There were a lot of people eager to see this show. And as we walked into the theater, they were doing that pre-show that they run now in most chain theaters. Only this one was promoting the upcoming events, special events. There was no sound, though. No one had turned down the sound. Well, that's fine. I didn't want to hear the sound anyway. An obnoxious promo reel running on a five-minute cycle is nothing to miss, worry about missing. But then as the showtime grew near, people became aware that, wait a minute, the actual show is going to start, and there's still no sound.
Mm.
So people started clapping, and some people yelling up, "Sound, sound!" These are people who are nostalgic for the past, when there used to be a projectionist, an actual human being, leaning through a little booth or a window in the back of the theater, elevated above the audience. It doesn't happen anymore. At most multiplexes, there may be one or tops two people wandering around the little warren of nests up there, controlling all the screens. That could be 16 or 25 screens.
Right.
There's nobody paying close attention to what's happening in any of the auditoriums. So what it takes now, and a friend of mine was the one who volunteered to do this, is running out to the lobby, and sometimes you have to run all the way to the front of the lobby, to the person who tore your ticket stub, who has a walkie-talkie, and you have to shout out, "Sound in Auditorium 6! And then they, "Oh, okay." And then they relay that to whoever is running the entire operation.
Yep.
So the sound came on just in the nick of time. That was a narrow escape.
Yeah.
But then this being a London West End equivalent of Broadway production, after Act 1 there was an intermission, a 15-minute intermission. Guess what? The house lights didn't come on.
No.
So now it's intermission time. People are stumbling down the steps, trying to go to the restrooms or buy a soda, and there's nobody there to turn on the lights. Now, you know, we paid, I don't know, $15, I think, to get into this thing. You'd think that if a theater, a multiplex, was having a special event like this, and they sold out the theater, they sold out the auditorium, they might consider having somebody keep an eye on it.
Mm-hmm.
But that requires attention to detail, responsibility, showmanship, whatever you want to call it. like, if you don't want to be running a movie theater, don't run a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to run it, you should run it right.
Yeah. I've run into this problem, you know, at not screenings, because they get it right for the press, but for the general public, I go to them too, and, you know, the movie's not in focus, and you can yell all you want, as you point out, there's nobody to hear you. But I will tell you that here in St. Louis, the Landmark chain has one theater at a mall called Plaza Frontenac, kind of an upscale mall. And it's kind of an art house because it's one of the Landmark theaters. And about 6 months ago, I was very surprised to find before the movie started, a young guy got up in front of the screen and said, hi, I just want to welcome everybody here. And, you know, when somebody stands up in front of a movie theater, you think bad things are going to happen. You know, the print is broken or the projection bulb is not working or something. But he got up there, introduced himself. Hi, I'm Jim. I'm the projectionist. I just want you to know we're going to start the show now. If you have any problems with it, please come out and let me know, and I'll do my best to fix it. In all the years I've been going to movies, I have never seen anything like that, and they do it at every show at that theater.
Well, Leonard, because they're a smart operation.
Yep.
People at Landmark know what they're doing, and they know that that's made an impression on you, probably made an impression on a lot of other people who were in the theater with you that night.
Yep.
And it means if you have a choice of where to go to see a particular film in the future, you're going to favor that theater.
Yep.
I mean, it's just good business.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's not, they're not doing charity work here. It's about running a good business.
Now, it's entirely possible that Jim, the projectionist, was also running all the other theaters that were in that complex. I think they have 6 or 8 theaters there. And it's but at least I was shown we're making an effort for you, the consumer.
Exactly so. I think the first people I'm aware of that started doing that are a small chain called, well, they're part of a bigger company, but here in Hollywood called Arclight. And the Arclight theaters have somebody to greet you at every show, and they make the same kind of announcement. And the idea is to, you know, to bring back, well, the human touch, a personal touch to what has become a rather cold operation in many cases of showing movies.
I think that they should also be much more aware by now of how we have so many other alternative ways of seeing movies without actually going to a theater.
Well, they're very aware of that, and that's the whole point. They're keenly aware of that. There's, you know, there's every day one more invitation on the menu not to go out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all different opportunities for you to see things at home, to stream, to download, to play in one form or another, and they all add up to not going out to the movies. And so the movie theater chains and the movie theater owners are, although some of them have been asleep, they've woken up, and they're highly aware that they have to do something to woo back the audience they've driven away, and to inspire, you know, young people to want to go out again. The single biggest growth area in the movie theater business is for what they call premium theaters. You know, the ones that offer, like, drinks for over 21 customers at certain shows, that offer a better food, that will actually bring food to you at your seat.
Reclining chairs.
Reclining chairs, all of that, because they've got to compete with everybody's home theater.
And are they competing? Is that still a decent business to be in?
Well, yes, it is, because, I mean, when things are going well, it's a great business. It's a feast or famine business for a lot of them. And the problem is for the smaller film. There's no problem filling a theater when you have Hunger Games. And when you have Hunger Games, everybody makes money. The concession stand makes money. The theater makes money, the distributor makes money, that's great. But after that has died down, and maybe it's not holiday season with, you know, a zillion new releases, and you have smaller films, more modest films, ones that aren't as heavily promoted or advertised, then it's a tough business.
Yeah. You know, as much as I like being able to watch movies on the big screen I have in my living room, streaming from Netflix or on DVD, Either way, there is still something about that experience of going to a movie theater. I can't imagine what it would be like to have seen Gravity any other way than on a giant screen. And there are certain movies that deserve that sort of projection, aren't there?
Absolutely. And what I find interesting is that that word sort of got out on Gravity. Gravity is the first film in a long time where people have gone back, I'm sure people go back to see Hunger Games and Twilight, too, diehard fans. But Gravity seemed to send out a message to avid moviegoers of all stripes that this is a film you've got to see in the theater. And a lot of people chose to see it in IMAX and IMAX 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can't duplicate at home.
I have never liked a 3D movie. In all those times I've been forced to put on those stupid glasses, I've never thought that 3D technology was worthwhile until I saw that film.
Well, that's what a lot of people think.
Yeah.
And I would argue the case for a couple of others. I think Life of Pi was a stunning movie in 3D. I think Hugo, Martin Scorsese's Hugo, was really effective use of 3D. But there are darn few that are worth the hassle.
Talking with Leonard Maltin here on America Weekend, I am Paul Harris. Leonard, let's talk about some of the movies that have not come out yet this year that we can tell people to keep an eye out for as we head towards Christmas, when I know there's going to be a whole slew of movies. Have you seen everything that's still to come?
I've seen almost everything. Not quite. There are a few remaining holdouts, but I'm not allowed to talk about some of the ones that I've seen. Now in the internet age, it's like the Wild West, almost anything goes.
Yeah.
But they still put embargoes on reviews of certain films if they show them to you ahead of time. I'll tell you one where there's no embargo that I can certainly talk about, and that's Saving Mr. Banks.
Mm-hmm.
With Emma Thompson and Tom Hanks. I just saw it for the second time. I rarely get to see films twice, but I screened it from my class at the University of Southern California Thursday night with two of the actors and with the production designer. And it captivated me all over again, just as it had when I saw it about a month ago. It's just a wonderful, wonderful movie. And I think Emma Thompson may well be up for an Academy Award for her wonderful performance as the author of Mary Poppins, Pamela P.L. Travers.
And Tom Hanks plays Walt Disney.
Hanks does a remarkable job evoking Walt Disney. Now, I grew up watching Walt Disney on television every week, as did millions of others. And he makes you believe he's Walt Disney.
You know, I got to see a screening of it also, and that night when I came home, NBC was showing their Carrie Underwood live version of The Sound of Music, and I thought, isn't it odd that here we are, pop culture is remaking in some form or another, or doing tribute to, musicals that were made 50 years ago,
yeah.
And we're doing it in an age when the musical, other than on stage across America, the musical on screen doesn't really exist other than in animation these days.
Yeah, well, there's the occasional exception, you know, here and there. But yes, but animation is really keeping the form alive.
Let's talk about some movies that people might have missed this year. I know you talked about this on YouTube, and you mentioned a couple of movies that I particularly liked, including Matthew McConaughey in Mud. I don't think enough people saw this one.
No, I agree with you. Mud is my favorite film of the year, still. Just a wonderful, wonderful movie. And by a writer-director named Jeff Nichols, very talented fellow, who grew up in the area of Arkansas that he writes about in this screenplay. And he says he was influenced by Mark Twain. That's a pretty good influence.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a Twain-like story about two 12-year-old boys who grow up in this small town on a tributary of the Mississippi, and go out on a launch one day and discover a strange kind of mystery man, a drifter, played by McConaughey, on this island, and who needs their help. And they decide to give him that help. And it's an adventure for them, and that goes in many unexpected directions. And just a wonderful, original, involving movie. kind of movie that pulls you in and doesn't let go.
Yeah, I thought the two boys who play the leads reminded me a lot of River Phoenix and Will Wheaton in Stand By Me. And
that's a very good comparison.
I actually thought the movie was going to go down that same path, but it doesn't because of the strength of Matthew McConaughey's performance.
Yeah, yeah, no, everyone's good in it. Reese Witherspoon, Sam Shepard, a lot of good supporting roles there.
Well, it's always worth talking to you, Leonard. I appreciate your time today. As always, let me get the plugs in here. Of course, you can go to leonardmaltin.com to find out more, read his reviews, and see some of his rants. Check out his new YouTube channel, and look for that Reels channel special he's doing with Gray Drake from Rotten Tomatoes. And pick up that 2014 edition of the Leonard Maltin Movie Guide. It's in paperback and an iPhone app as well. I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend.
Weekend.